Welcome to Average Meeple, where average people talk about games. My name's James.
And I'm Casey.
And today we're going to kind of do a little bit of a recap of this year, talk about some honorable mentions of games that we played, maybe talk about some games that we didn't get to that came out this year, and kind of go over our favorites as of the end of 22, after all the fun gaming we went through this year. But first, we'll do our regular segment, One Together, One Apart. And I guess I'll go this first this time.
I would.
Just going to jump into it. So my game, it's actually the first time I've ever played it. And to be fair, I haven't actually finished the game. I'm playing it as we speak on Board Game Arena. And I think you've played this one before, Casey. And this is Century Spice Road.
I have played it before. And it was on Board Game Arena. Probably with the people you're playing with.
I'm actually playing with complete strangers. I just... I don't know. I was looking for a game to, you know, for Spire up in the background, and I don't know. I saw this one. I'd heard good things, I think, from our friend Bill. But yeah, so I decided to try it. And yeah, I'm about halfway through it, and yeah, it's, so far I'm enjoying it. Basically, it's a game of it's a fairly straightforward game. Basically, the point of the game is you're collecting spice, and you're using that spice to buy or pay for, I think, contracts. I forget exactly what they call it. But you're fulfilling these contracts or marketplace things to get victory points, and the way you get spice is by playing merchants, and merchants are represented by cards. So basically, on your turn, you can play a merchant to get spice. You can acquire a new merchant from the market. You can spend spice to fulfill a contract, or you can rest all your merchants to collect all the ones that you played back into your hand. And I think that's basically the whole game. You play until I think five or six. Contracts are completed by any player, and then the game kind of ends. There's just whoever has the most points. So it's fairly straightforward, but I think it gives you that sort of, again, there's still that decision-making process of, what merchant do I buy? When do I play? When do I rest? Because resting is sort of like a wasted action, but you get all your merchants back. So it's, it gives you some of those sort of, important decisions to make without being too complex. And so far, again, first playthrough, but I'm enjoying it.
I've only played it once myself. Well, maybe twice. Maybe three times. I take that back. I think I've played it four times on Board Game Arena.
No, just four times. And just four times more than you thought. 4X, the original statement.
Yeah, just four times. I agree. I think it's a really good game. It's fairly straightforward, sort of deck builder game. And you're really just trying to manage when do you rest and how, based on what everyone else is trying to accomplish. With their current spice. And so you're really trying to figure out what everyone else is doing all at the same time. And that's kind of the game here, is you're watching what everyone else is doing to try to figure out, like, how far, when should I rest, because they might be doing this or that. So there's not a lot of direct player interaction, but that indirect player interaction is pretty high level, I think.
Yeah, and one way that players sort of interact too is when you acquire a merchant, you kind of, they're in a row, and you kind of have to pay a spice. Like, how do I describe this? If the merchant's in the fourth spot in that row, you have to pay three spice to acquire it. If it's in the fifth spot, pay four spice. You kind of have to put a spice on each merchant beforehand to get that one. So it's sort of a, I don't want to call it risk-reward, but that's sort of like, how much am I willing to pay for this merchant? Maybe if I wait around, maybe a couple other people will buy earlier merchants, maybe it'll get cheaper, maybe they'll buy that one. You don't really know. So they can kind of impact that a little bit. And so that's kind of a fun little mechanic. I've seen that in other games, but I do like that.
Yeah, pretty common in other games, like Small World uses that for its just typical drafting system.
Right. But I didn't mention Century Spice Road, designed by Emerson Matsuchi and published by Plan B Games. First time. I'm enjoying it. I'll probably play it again.
Cool.
I want a part.
Yeah, mine is also a game I played for the first time. I just played it for the first time yesterday. It's a game that I've really been interested in playing, very curious about, have only heard good things about, and finally got to give it a chance. It is Quacks of Quedlinburg.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool game. Have you played this before, James?
I played it once before. My brother owns it. Because I think it won like this. It was like the Spiel that year, right? Like, I think.
I'm sure it was.
It won some awards, but anyway, carry on.
Yeah, so if you're not familiar with the game, it's a 2-4 player, like, push-your-luck bag-building game. This is my best way to describe it. It was designed by Wolfgang Warsch. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say it's not Warsch. In his Warsch.
We're sorry, Wolfgang.
Probably Wolfgang then. And, published by Schmidt Spiel. In this game, you're taking on the role of a they're described as charlatans, but they're really or like quack doctors. So there's like really harebrained doctors trying to come up with these weird potions or concoctions. And really that's what the whole premise of this game is. You're throwing like pumpkins and I don't know, spiders and mushrooms and all this weird stuff into this potion. And you're trying not to make it explode. So you score points. There's kind of like this circular track. You start at one point on it and you try to work your way farther and farther on the track. And the further you make it, the more points you get and the more the more money you get to spend on more reagents. So how you do this is you draw reagents from this bag. So you have a bag there. It's got your reagents in it. Each reagent has a number on it from like, I think it's 1 to 4 maybe. And then from where your last reagent was, you move up that many spaces and put your new reagent there. And then you continue to do that. Now you can stop at any time. And the catch here is that you have a bunch of negatives in your bag. They don't take you backward, but if you accumulate 7 or more than 7 of these negative points, your potion just explodes. And you have like limited options once you're done creating it. It really like halves your options. You can either like buy reagents or get victory points. And if your potion doesn't explode, you get to do both. So you're really just trying to push your luck, see how far you can make it. And aside from these negative ones, you have these other reagents, these like positive ones, and they interact with each other. They interact with your board. They do all kinds of cool stuff that can really change the way the game plays. For instance, I think one of them lets you move up more spaces based on how many of a different reagent you've already played that turn. Things along those lines. They can be really powerful. And there's 2 sides to every reagent bag, so you can mix and match how you play the game from different game sessions to give you a lot of replayability. I thought this game played really, it's really straightforward. Once you figure out what you're doing, a very, very straightforward game. Another game where there's not a lot of player interaction, but there is enough. So you're really focused on really what you're doing and pushing your own luck, but you are kind of seeing what everyone else is doing at the same time. There are limited reagents. So I only played this a 2-player count, so disclaimer here. But if you add more players, I think this plays up to 4. So if you were to add 4 people, I would assume that those reagents become more and more scarce and a little more contested. But in the 2-player version, it just seemed like whatever reagent I wanted was readily available for me to buy. So I didn't really get too much of that. I think this played really well, though. I really enjoyed it. I really had a good time playing it. I do like those push your luck games. Even like when you fail, it's like almost more fun when you fail. Cause like, oh darn it. Like if I'd only done this or this would have happened, like it's just random chance and fun. Right. And I really like that lightheartedness about the game. So I think this game plays really well with newer players, even like this really easy game to teach. It's not a very weighty game. Like I said, it's very straightforward, but I think this would be good for newer players or like a more relaxed group of players, people that maybe aren't as into board games or, you know, just a more relaxed, casual group of friends that you want to play with. I think this game really fits that bill because there's no harshness to it at all. You're not like slamming the door on somebody else. You're really just focused on making your own weird, crazy concocted potion and hoping that someone else doesn't make a better one. But yeah, Quacks of Quedlinburg, really, really fun game. Really enjoyed it. Straightforward, easy. It plays in like 45 minutes, which is also great.
Yeah, I need to see if I can get another playthrough of that one in, because yeah, it had a lot of hype a couple years ago. I think it won a bunch of awards. My brother owns it, and I've only played it once, but I'd like to get that one back out sometime, play with him. Cool. Yeah, so for our game together, we played we've actually just been playing this quite a bit, just asynchronously online, and that is Six Nymphed, also known as Take Six, I think is another name for it.
Right.
And yeah, this was designed by another Wolfgang, different Wolfgang Kramer, published by Amigo. I'm going to try and explain this. Basically, you have four rows of cards. Right out of the gate, I'm screwing
this
up.
Four rows of cards.
So there's four rows of cards. Each row has up to five cards in it. If you pull, so on your turn, everyone, and it happens simultaneously, everyone chooses a card from their hand. And then once everyone's chosen, those cards are all revealed. Those cards must be placed on the end of one of these four rows. And the way that that's done is that it's placed on a row where it is higher than every other. Well, so first off, each of these rows, cards are in ascending order. And so your card must continue that ascending order, and it goes next to the closest one that it can. So, for instance, if there's a 50 at the end of one row and, say, a 60 at the end of another row, and you play, like, a 62, technically that's higher than both of them, but it would go next to the 60 because it has to go, you know, close to the next highest one it can. And so you play each of those. And each card has a number of sort of points that that card is worth. Points are actually a bad thing. You don't want points in this game. And so what happens is if you ever play the sixth card in a row, then you have to take that entire row, just not into your hand, but just off to the side, and you basically take all those points. You start the game with 66 points, I believe. And as soon as a player goes negative, the game sort of ends, and whoever has the most points remaining. And again, as you collect points, you subtract those. You start with 66. Every card you collect, you subtract that many points. And once somebody goes negative, the game is over, and you see who has the most points remaining. They are the winner. And, you know, there is some strategy to the game because the cards go from card number one up to 104, and there's only one of each card. So, like, as cards are played, you kind of can, you know, can guess exactly what might be left out there in everyone's hands and things, what they might play, you know. And so, you know, it's one thing I did mention. If you ever are forced to play a card that is simply lower than everything else, so say you had the one and you were forced to play the one, and that's just lower than every card on the table, then you can choose a row to take. Like, you're forced to take a row and you just pick one. Sometimes that can be, like, to your advantage. Again, if you start the game with a one card, you can just, like, maybe immediately play it just to take, like, a really cheap row or something, because you know at some point you're going to take a row. You know, so there is some sort of, you know, depth to strategy of what to play when. But at the same time, it's just a lot of chance too, because you have you don't have no idea what other people are going to play, but because you can kind of count cards and things. But, you know, there's definitely some randomness to it. People have different strategies and different thoughts about how they're going to go about it. And so you can definitely be like, oh, I think I can play this. And then all of a sudden you say, oh, everyone else had the same idea. Now it just went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I took the sixth card in that row. And you never know.
Yeah, that is the thing. You just never know. This game has a lot of those moments where you go, like both of those reactions happen all the time when you play this game. And it is seemingly random because you're like hoping. There's a bunch of other people, and you're just hoping that they don't see what you saw, or they're not going to do the same thing that you want to do. Or, you know, sometimes there might be it might be 61, and then there's two more slots, and then the end, and you have 64. And so you're hoping, man, I hope they don't have 62 and 63 and are going to play it, because then I'm going to take that whole row. And lo and behold, sometimes they don't. Or sometimes they do, and that's just the way it works.
Just happens.
There is more depth to this game than I initially thought. I thought it was just really random the first few times I played it, and then I saw, like, oh, you can boost a row, like you can shove that thing all the way up to 100, and then force people not to, like, ever interact with that row, and you kind of eliminate a row from the board, and now you're contesting over three instead of four. There is some strategy to the game that you kind of develop over time, but really you don't even need it to have a good time with this game. I think it's just super fun and light. Yeah. And the worse your strategy, the more fun I think this game is.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with your statement of it. Just every round, you're just like, I'm going to pick this card. Maybe you have some reasoning behind it. Maybe not so much. It doesn't really matter. And then you're just like, I'm either going to, like, cheer or swear, you know. It's just like, yes,
oh, yep, that's
you know,
it.
It's like, you just never know. It's gonna be one of it's like, you know, and it's kind of fun every time just to see how each turn unfolds. But super simple game, super small game. You know, it's, again, the whole game is one deck of 104 cards. Nice lightweight game, a lot of fun though. We constantly have a basic game going of it. That said, I think there are some variants you can play. that kind of changed some of the rules of how you can play cards. I don't know. We tried that once and it became almost too chaotic for us anyway. I don't know. We kind of like it for that simplicity. We just kind of stick with the core rules. But Six Nymphed, fun game. Check it out.
Six Nymphed, fun game.
All right, on to the sort of the main segment here, and that's just kind of recapping 2022 a little bit. We wanted to start out and just mention some great games we played this year. You know, we probably mentioned them in past episodes maybe, but maybe we didn't get a chance to. So, you know, we've each kind of chosen three great games we played this year. No, these are not necessarily the games that came out this year, but just three games that we got a chance to play and thought were worth bringing back up.
And just know we're not going to go into all the details of these games. If you do want to check out the details of these games, there's tons of videos out there that'll walk you through them, or you can go back to our past episodes where we spoke about them, or check them out on Board Game Geek. Those are great resources. But these are just some of our favorite games, and we just wanted to bring them up and bring them to your attention.
Yeah. Why don't you kick us off with your first one there, Casey?
Yeah, so my first one is a game that I'd never played before this year that I really liked. And it's Robinson Crusoe. It's a cooperative game. I had never played it in the past, bought it this year. And man, the look on your face tells me that this is on your list too, and hopefully game number one.
I didn't actually order mine per se, like 1, 2, 3. What's funny is before this episode, we were talking about, you mentioned, Casey, I think we're going to have a gap. We're going to have an overlap. And in my mind, I was like, yeah, I think we are. And it wasn't this game, but this game is now an overlap.
I know which game you're talking about. And I didn't add this game. I know which game you're talking about. We'll get to that one later.
Okay.
But Robinson Crusoe, obviously fantastic game. We can both talk about it now since it's on both of our lists. Yeah. But it's a cooperative game. I think it's so unique and so well done. Very, very fun game. Very simple choices. Once you figure out what you're doing, once you figure out how the game works, and this is true with so many games that seem complex on the surface, you're really just doing one thing,
yeah,
like the whole game, and that one thing is so much fun. I really like this game.
Yeah,
very, very positive experience.
It's funny, you know, I mean, I thought I was gonna say this and you were gonna be like, oh man, you're right, that should be on the list, and I'm surprised you remembered, because yeah we played this when Casey came to visit. We played this and man, you know, I've had this game for a few years and it's been a while since I played it, and that was the first time in a while, and man, yeah, it just brought back how good it really is. It is such a good game. It's maybe my favorite co-op game. It's really good. And you're absolutely right. When you read the rules and everything, like, it seems really complex, but really once you sort of dig into it, you're right. There's really like one key mechanic that everything follows, and it's actually not that complicated once you really start playing it. Super fun game. You know, again, there's only a certain set of scenarios, but I don't know, I can tell you just from playing the first scenario a couple different times, it plays very differently each time because just crazy events that come up and stuff. It's a really, really fun game. Highly recommend.
Agreed. The next game on my list is Cascadia.
Okay.
So that was a game that you had suggested that we both play. It was a newer game, had a lot of hype. Like, hey, this is probably an easy game for us to play apart. And our intention there was to do a YouTube video. Lo and behold, that's not out yet.
It's coming.
But yeah, it's coming. But I did play this game a lot. And I played it at multiple player counts. I played it at all the player counts. I think it's great at all the player counts. I really, really enjoy this game. Cascadia, very quick game to play. Turns are fast. They're rapid. You're always doing something. And the artwork is great. The general mechanic of the game is a lot of fun. Just a kind of tile drafting game with wilderness animals. Really cool.
Yeah, I only got a chance to play.
Was this game also on your list?
It is not also on my list. No, but I'll give my feedback for it. But no, this was not on my list. But I think it's a good pick. I only played it that one or two times when I was, when we talked about playing it before. You know, I don't own the game. I was borrowing it. But straightforward game. Great intro game, I think. You know, really fun. We often say it, but it falls into that bucket of a lot of great decisions without a lot of complexity. And I highly recommend.
Yeah, and for those people listening that maybe have no idea, we did not tell each other what games we picked. And that's kind of like the fun part of this for us, is we just said, hey, we're going to pick games in these categories. Let's talk about them. Mm-hmm. We have no idea. I have no idea what James picked. No. We both think we know some of the games, but we didn't share that information prior to this call. So All right.
Yeah, I'll go to the next game.
I'll go.
You want to finish your list, or you want me to go to my second one?
I'm going to finish my list. I'm going to be really selfish here. I'm going to finish my list because I don't think this one is going to overlap.
Okay.
Either. This is Raiders of the North Sea.
Oh.
Mm-mm. Yeah. See, I know what game you thought I was going to pick here, and I didn't. Raiders of the North Sea really, really surprised me. It was a game we played the first time on digital. I liked it so much, I bought the physical copy of it. And the physical copy translates, I think, even better than the digital variant.
Sure.
Did. But it shows you that the digital variant is really, really well implemented. Really fun game, worker placement game. Your Vikings, Valhalla is a thing. You get points for people dying, as typical for any Viking style game. Really cool, really thematic, bright, popping artwork. I really like this game. Very fun.
Yeah, I bet it looks good on a table. I've never played it physically. I've only played it on the Steam implementation that we played on. It was a fun game. Yeah, and I bet it looks nice on a table. I bet the artwork's great. That one didn't even occur to me. I'm surprised. So did you foresee Robinson Crusoe overlapping when you, because again, before this, you said you thought we're gonna have an overlap. So
I know which game it is, and
okay,
I intentionally didn't put it on this part of my list.
Okay. Well, yeah, the next game coming up, you know, I think I've mentioned it every episode for the past 10 episodes.
Let me guess.
Nidavellir.
Is it Nidavellir?
It's Nidavellir. Yeah. It's got to be on the list. It's so good. I'm not going to say anything else about it because we've talked about it every past five episodes. So if you want to know more, go back, check those out, or just look it up. Nidavellir, great game. Can't mention it enough. I'll stop mentioning it in 2023. But last chance in 2022, got to mention it. It's going to come up one more time.
Okay, at least.
All right. Awesome. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, and of course, you know, those are some, you know, great games we got to play in 2022. Of course, there's every year a ton of games come out, and, you know, we don't...
Wait a second. You only named two games.
Oh, crap. Crap.
What's game
crap,
number three?
Crap. Right, hold on. Now,
what cut, is game number
cut,
three?
Cut all that. Going back.
Cut it.
Okay, hold on. So I whispered, it'll come up one more time. All right, so
I'm gonna cut none of that, just so you know. This is all gonna be in here.
No, you gotta cut it. All right.
Nope.
It can be in the edit. This is post-edit stuff. We gotta have a good episode.
Nah.
All right.
This is it.
Yeah, man, I just jumped right through it. Nidavellir was just so good. I was like, all right, moving on. No, my third game is, and I think we played this when you came to visit, Casey. I don't remember. So you can remind me. And that's Cape May.
We did.
Yeah. Cape May, I think, is a great game. It is, you know, without
Brass Light,
right? It's kind of like Brass Light. Yeah. I mean, that's how it was introduced to me, and I think that's the thing. It gives me all the same feelings I have from playing a really heavyweight game without being a really heavyweight game. And you know, it just really streamlines a lot of, because I feel like a lot of heavyweight games are like six or seven different tracks you have to be paying attention to, and they all interact mm-hmm. in different ways, and this just gets rid of all of that. But there's still this sort of like, I really have to plan out my turns here, right? Like, how am I going to move to get to where I need to be to do the things I want to do in the time limit of the game? And so it still gives me that same sort of like brain burner puzzle without all this other stuff that's going on the sidelines. And I really, really like that about it. I think it's honestly like a great sort of, I don't want to say like an intro game, but maybe that like next level game, like you want to get into something really meaty maybe, but like you just kind of want that interim. Like, this to me is maybe that. It's called Cape May. I really enjoy it. Yeah.
Yeah. Me too. It's one of those games where there's a lot of stuff you want to do, a lot of stuff that you could do, and not nearly enough time to get it all done. Mm-hmm. And they balance that really well.
Yeah. All right. Yes. What do we have there? We had Robinson Crusoe.
Yeah,
go through yours real quick. Robinson Crusoe.
So mine were Robinson Crusoe.
Yep.
Cascadia.
Yep.
And Raiders of the North Sea. These weren't all games that I had played for the first time this year. Actually, they all were. I take that back. These were all games I played for the first time this year. All great games. Highly recommend them all.
Yeah, mine were Nidavellir, Robinson Crusoe, and Cape May. Nidavellir, I think, was the only one the first time this year. Cape May, I think I played last year. I think I got it for Christmas last year. But basically this year. you know, every year a ton of games come out. Casey and I, and you know, no way have a chance to play all of them. Even 1% of them, we probably don't, you know, don't even get to play. But as we wanted to kind of choose a game that we had seen or heard of that released in 2022 that we haven't gotten a chance to play, that we just wanted to bring up and say. I'll go first on this one. This one was an easy one for me because I actually have the game on my shelf. It came in like 2 days ago because I saw it on.
Surprise!
I saw it. Hold on.
Surprise!
This is not something. This is not.
James
something.
Has a game on his shelf, unopened.
It is
that
it is
he would love to play.
It is unopened, but hold on. This is not something that, like, you know, I've had sitting there forever. It literally came in this week. I saw it on sale online, and I was like, you know what? I really, really want to play this. It came out this year, and that is Twilight Inscriptions. This is a game that two things about this game that all that it's something I don't get a chance to experience. One, it's a roll and write type game, which I don't know if I even own a roll and write, honestly. Like, that's just the whole genre of game that I know is really popular that I have so little experience in. So I'm very interested in that. And two, I'm never going to play Twilight Imperium. Like, it's just never going to happen. I mean, I would love to, but this is in that same universe of Twilight Imperium. So maybe I can get some of that same feeling of that, but in a roll and write version. So I've been really excited for it. I saw it on sale online. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to treat myself to an early Christmas present and pull a trigger. So yes, it's on the shelf, unwrapped, but that's going to get played here within the first couple weeks of the new year, I think.
Right. I actually played that in Essen at Spiel.
Yeah.
And just the demo version of it. And actually, cool tie-in here to my actual first game is another game that I played the demo version of at Essen. And this is technically, like, maybe not, shouldn't go on this list because it's a game I haven't. It says it's a game I haven't played. It's a game I really haven't played, and that's Terra Nova.
Mm.
I played, like, the demo version. It was in German. I played with a bunch of German people. And so I don't know the fact that I got the real experience of it. And cool thing here, I actually just went to a board game swap meet yesterday, and someone was selling this already. I got this for like $20.
So you have an unplayed game on the shelf too.
Well, technically, it's already been played, but not by you.
Well,
it's open.
Yours is open.
Played.
Yours is
not
yours
by
is
me.
Opened.
Yeah, and it's like simplified Terra Mystica. And I thought it was really well done when I played the demo. I really want to get some time behind it and see how it stacks up. Game I'm very excited to give a shot here and try this next year.
Yeah, I'm really interested in your thoughts on that because it's going to tie into our next segment here in a way. And so that game I'm very interested in. I've not had a chance to play it at all. I did see it actually. I think it was at Unplugged at the first look area. But I didn't get a chance to sit down with it, but
cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, there's probably way more great games released in 2022 that we're gonna be trying to find next year, but you know, we just want to kind of want to pick one and mention why. Yeah, kind of going into our last segment here for this main section, and that's revisiting our current favorites list. You know, on our website, we have our three favorite games kind of listed. You know, we don't revise it that often, but, you know, at least once a year, we probably should. So before we update it there, we kind of want to just mention it here. So, yeah, kind of going to revisit our top three favorites list and see where that falls. You want me to start, Casey, or you want to start?
You can go ahead.
All right. So I don't have these in a particular order. And I'm going to start with the least interesting one first, which is Brass Birmingham. And the reason that that's the least interesting is because it's the only one that kept a spot on my list. I actually thought about bumping this, honestly, not because I maybe dislike it, but because I haven't played it much. I mean, we played it at once when you came to visit. That's the only time this year I got to play it. I'm just not playing it much these days. And so, I don't know, I might have to bump it soon. But I wanted to leave it there just because it historically has been my number one favorite. I still love it. I loved it when we played it. I'd love to play it more. But my other spots both got bumped. So I do have some new games on the list.
Yeah, very similar experience here, James. My top game is also the same. It's the only one that stayed. My other two got bumped as well, and that's Clank. Love Clank. I tried to pick my games on what would I just never turn down. What would I, if someone said, hey, let's play this game, I would say, yep, in, let's do it. This is going to be a lot of fun. And Clank, no matter how many times I played that game or which version of that game, I just love it. I love that game. It's really fun. I don't foresee it ever leaving my list. But who knows?
What is your preferred version of Clank? I've only ever played the classic, I guess, because there's like Clank in Space.
See, I like Clank. I like classic. So there's two like actual versions. There's Clank and there's Clank in Space. And then each one has expansions. So there's expansions for In Space and there's expansions for Clank. There's an argument to be made that Clank in Space fixes a lot of the stuff that's wrong with Clank, but I actually like some of the stuff that's wrong with it. Like, there are just some overpowered things in Clank, and it just alters the way the game plays around it. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. It's not always a bad thing. Like, that can be a good thing, and I really like that. Clank in Space fixes some of that. I think it's much more balanced.
Sure.
But to me, I like the original Clank and, well, some of the expansions to it as well. They're all really fun to play. I've never played Acquisitions Incorporated, the campaign version, which you had, and I know we debated on playing that one time.
You gotta find a chance to get that out.
I'd really like to play that, but
no,
I haven't.
All right. I'll go into my next game. So, you know, previously a game I had on my list, and it's still a great game to me, is Sagrada. I really like just rolling dice and drafting, so Sagrada really just scratches those itches. But, you know, I think, as we mentioned many times before, so this is the last time of this year, hopefully I'll bring it up, is Nidavellir. Great drafting game. It's bumped Sagrada for me, and yeah, that's what fills that drafting itch that I have on my board game list.
Yeah, Nidavellir made my list as well. I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. We are both in love with this game. If you haven't checked it out yet, as much as we've raved about it and are still listening to this podcast, please, please do yourself a favor and go check out Nidavellir.
So good. And actually, we've been playing some of the expansions online. I actually don't... I have to ask myself if I prefer them or not. They really add a lot to the game. And
they do, but I have no idea what's going
on. Yeah, we actually went back to like the base game because it was just like it was one of those things. I think we just actually need to sit down and like actually read all the different parts of the expansion, because they really, it's no longer just like a straightforward way that things interact. Now, like, all of a sudden you're swapping places of cards and adding extra tracks and doing all this stuff. It's like, we need to like take some time and actually look at the rules of that before we really add them all. But they looked cool anyway.
Some cards like capture other cards, it just adds a lot. You're right,
but all right, and personally, my third game, previously it was Istanbul, was one of my favorite three. That's been bumped for Gaia Project. We haven't played it in a while, honestly, but man, that game does a lot for me in a lot of ways. And, you know, that's like my, and I've got, and you know, I almost bumped Brass for it, because again, I feel like on my list, I really need one big, like really thinky, heavy game. And so I've got two, but I'll probably end up bumping Brass, maybe. I don't know. I don't know. Or Brass. I don't know. One of the two. I probably don't need both on here, but Gaia Project is, I think it's just because it's like a big thinky game that we've actually played a lot this year. And so it just had to go on my list. I really, 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 really like it.
That almost made my list. And I went back to my decision-making process here as, what if at any time someone mentioned a game, would I play it? And Gaia Project was one of those, there are some times where I'm like, I don't know that I want to play Gaia Project. I don't know that I'm really wanting to dive down that wormhole of a game there. I love it, though. I really, really love it. I really, really like that game. Very, very, like, inches away from making my top three.
I can see that, because like it's not a short game, you know, and sometimes you're not looking to like sit down for a long period and stuff. So like, I can see maybe not feeling it, but and that's why I say I'm really interested in what you think of Terra Nova. Because that's like the latest.
That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah, it's like the latest rendition of this, you know, kind of game. And I mean, I know it's Terra Mystica is what it redid, but Gaia Project was also a re-implementation of Terra. So they're all kind of the same family. So I'm really interested in what you think of that, because maybe that's just the best version yet. I don't know.
Maybe. But for me, I had to put a co-op game on this list because I love co-op games. And I was wrong for not putting a co-op game on my original list. So my original list was Clank, Harbor, and Dragoon. And I don't really even like Dragoon that much. I don't know why it was on my list. I think I just saw it when I was making my list.
Right.
But so I actually put Robinson Crusoe on here because of all the co-op games that I would want to play that someone would mention, that one is by far, I would be like, yes, yes. I don't care if it takes me 30 minutes to teach you how to do these two actions. Yes, we're going to play this game. Yes, I love it. I'm never going to turn it down. I've been playing solo campaigns by myself, and I love it. Like, really, really like this game.
So you picked it up then? I don't know that you picked it up.
Oh, I've had it. I actually had it before I went to your place.
Oh.
I bought it right before I went to your place.
We did talk
a few months
this.
Ago, right?
Yeah.
And I bought it because I was looking for solo games. And that was a highly recommended one. And it plays really, really well with one person.
Nice.
So,
you know, I don't do a lot of solo gaming, but one game I'm looking to do is Twilight Inscription because it plays one.
Oh, no way. That's cool.
I think there's like an AI or something that you're like playing against or something. Oh, yeah. But so that's how I know that game's coming off the shelf very soon. It's going to get played. I have confidence.
Nice. fun. All right.
Cool.
I think that wraps up our new top three, right?
Yeah, that's that. Yes, that's really our recap 2022. You know, we're going to have some new thoughts on things going into 2023, but we'll cover that next month. As we typically do, we're just going to wrap up with some lightning reviews.
All right, you ready for this? These are all going to sound familiar. Mm-hmm. All right, first game up, Nidavellir,
S++.
Mm-hmm. Clank,
A.
And Robinson Crusoe.
Also an S. Yeah, that's a good list.
All right.
It's a good list.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going that way. All right, we can do that. Fire these three off. This is going to sound familiar. Brass Birmingham.
I would give that an S tier.
Nice.
I've only played that game once, and we played it wrong, and I loved it every second of it. Really liked that game. I think you nailed it on choosing this as like your favorite game.
Nice. Nidavellir.
S++++++.
And last one, Gaia Project.
Yeah, that's either high A. I honestly feel like there's just something that could just be adjusted in Gaia Project. Like, it has that element to me where it's almost perfect, but it's not quite. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Almost perfect, not quite. And I obviously don't know what that thing that is that's missing, but I know that it's there. High A.
Oh, we got this is a solid list of six games right here. SSA and SSA for each of us. And I guess we give ourselves S's for our top three favorite games right now.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So, So Brass, Nidavellir, Gaia Project, and yours was one more time?
Nidavellir, Clank, and Robinson Crusoe.
Yeah, that's a good list. All right.
Great bunch of games. All right. I think then that wraps it up. Thank you all for sticking around to the end of the episode, hanging out here with us and checking out our recap for the year. You can continue to find our show wherever podcasts are available, including Spotify, the Apple Store, and Google Podcasts, among others.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Make sure to check out our website, averagepeople.com. You can find more about us, get links to some of our content, and see some reviews. You can also go to averagepeople.com/ask to drop us a comment or question, and we'll try to answer that right here on the show. Feel free to follow us on Twitter @averagemeeple to get the latest updates on our content. And check us out on Instagram where we post some pictures from our recent wargaming adventures. I'm going to mention it for the last time of this year, but we're hoping to get some YouTube content out there shortly. 2023, it's going to be a good year. We got plans.
2023 will have YouTube content, guaranteed.
Guaranteed.
All right, with that, he's James, and I'm Casey. This was our last episode for 2022. Thanks for sticking around with us this whole year, and we hope to see you next time. Lightning actually sound like? It's gonna sound like something, right? Like thunder sounds like something, but like what does lightning sound like?
I think thunder is just the sound of lightning.
All right. Well, with that, he's James and I'm Casey. This is our last episode for 2023. Thanks again for listening, and we hope to see you next time.
2022, it's 2022, asshole.